Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
So your world is torn apart and you're left with a broken heart and you feel that there's no real healing inside. Oh no, but this I know. You cannot feel it, just believe it. He'll make everything. He'll make it all right. He will make it all right.
All right, all right. And I do hope everything is all right with you this week. It may have been a challenging week. It may have been some difficulties there, but you are here, and I am Jackie Wayans, your host of Don't Give Up Radio, and I'm thankful that we will have another opportunity to encourage one another, to inspire one another, to motivate one another to face the challenges that we may have in life. You know, Don't Give Up Radio is all about challenging the challenge to pursue their dream no matter what, no matter how hard. And we know from the news today there's so much going on in the world, and it's particularly with our youth, our young adults, our young men. And when I say our young men, I mean that in a collective way. And they have their fair share of risk out there every day. And the juvenile system is one that is growing in many regards and not growing in the right direction. Many juveniles being tried as adults today and making mistakes at early age of 16 or younger and being tried as adults and may not see the light of day until 40 or 50 years old, because of often a nonviolent crime that they may have committed as a minor. And so, you know, we realize that there's warranted situations out there, but many of us who are parents, we're very concerned about our kids. Those of us who are young adults, we may see what's going on, but not really process it and realize what we need to do to adjust, to make changes so that we can make the best decision for our life. So tonight, yeah, will give us an inside glance as we look at his life being in and out of the juvenile detention system and eventually into prison. However, today he is an author of multiple books who enjoys inspiring other young people and helping them to understand the need for making better choices. Alfred Perry, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Jackie. It's an honor and a blessing to be, just to have this opportunity to be on your show. Thank you very, very much.
Well, I know we had been trying to get this done for quite a while, and I always believe that there's no such thing as coincidence, and when the timing is right, it will happen. And so here we are. And we know from the intro that you are now, you know, out of jail. You're living a thriving life out in Georgia. You're an author, but I wanna take it back as always, because I wanna find out how does one get to the challenges that you were facing. You know, where did that stem from? Where it all began? So set it up for us and take us back and tell us a little bit about your years growing up. You know, what was your home life like, your upbringing?
I was born and raised in Fort Pierce, Florida. My mother, the late Emma Bell Hamilton, she had a total of 11 kids, 8 boys and 3 girls. 6 of my older siblings was from a different father, and 5, me and 4 of my youngest siblings was from the same father. My mother, she was a very spiritual woman, and she instilled morals, values, and discipline in me and my other siblings at a very young age. And even though my father, he couldn't read or write, he was also very spiritual. He believed in hard work and commitment and dedication, and he also instilled values and morals in us as well.
Well, it's important to have that kind of teaching, especially with a family so large. Oh, my gosh, that's a lot of kids to keep track of. So now, you know, considering that you had those, you know, morals being taught in the home, what were the things that happened that kind of led you into the world of, you know, the whole introduction to the juvenile system?
Well, it was at the age of, I was at the age of 12. I was in the fifth grade, and I met a guy named Billy Booth. And at first, Billy Booth and I didn't like one another. So after school, we would like argue and throw rocks at one another, you know, on our way home. And we almost like did this almost every other day after school. And so finally, one particular day, Billy asked me that he had told me that his mother wanted to meet me. And so I traveled with him to his residence, and his mother, you know, who, just like my mother, was also very spiritual and hardworking and devoted mother, she sat down and told me that she didn't like the fact that me and Billy was fighting, and she wanted us to be friends. She told me that she would treat me just like, you know, she would treat her own children.
And okay, now, you must have been a little scared when he said, because I know when I was growing up and you had a nemesis and they said, you know, this is my big brother or this is my mom, you were in for a little bit of trouble there.
Yes, I was. I can honestly admit I was very nervous. I was very afraid and scared because I didn't know, you know, if he had any older brothers or uncles that probably wanted, you know, I didn't know what the outcome would be, but I did go because he told me that his mother wanted to meet me, and she, you know, didn't like the fact that we was arguing and fighting every day after school. But after I had the opportunity to meet her, and after she expressed herself in such a very respectful way, and so that's when it all started as far as my relationship with Billy Booth.
Well, okay, so now how does that tie in to the activities? I know that the neighborhood that he lived in was not the best. Tell us about that.
Okay, yes. Well, growing up, you know, in the neighborhood where my mother and my other siblings lived, we was a close-knit neighborhood. We was not exposed to, like, for example, cigarettes, alcohol, any types of drugs, bad languages of that sort. So after meeting Billy Booth, I noticed that his older, he had nine sisters, and that was one of the things that drew me to Billy Booth, because his older sisters maybe was 2, 3, 4 years older than I. They were saying how cute I was and that they wanted me to, you know, continue to come over. But it was also the neighborhood with an environment which they lived in near. In Fort Pierce, Florida, they have a street, a town that's called Avenue D. And this particular stroll is known for drugs, alcohol, bars, and clubs, and prostitution of that sort. So this was like a whole new world to me. And I can never forget, I remember just as though it was yesterday, when I was exposed to it, it was, like I say, it was frightening and nervous at the beginning. But as time went on, me coming over to Billy Booth's house on a regular basis, I felt myself, you know, getting drawn to this lifestyle, to a different lifestyle.
Well, so tell me, when you say this lifestyle, what were some of the things you were now seeing and exposed to at 12 years old that you had not seen before that was actually a little bit intriguing to you?
Oh, for an example, Billy's sister and us, they would take me to the pool room where there was mostly older adults, and there was bars and clubs nearby as well. And I was exposed to that as well, because we would sneak in the back of the bar, which was a club too, and we would stand there and watch the people dancing on the dance floor. So, and like I said, the alcohol and the drugs and the fast life, all that was new to me, and it was like I say, a whole new world.
What about the activities that happened in the home? I know you said that the mom seemed, you know, very nice, a lot like your own mom. What about the kids? Was everybody, you know, pretty much following her, the way she laid down the law?
Yes, the younger kids was. Like I said, Billy had nine sisters, and the one that was around our age, it was very well-mannered. But the problem was, Billy's mother, she worked at two jobs. And during at that time, most of the times during the engagement, when the sister was smoking marijuana and when they was drinking of alcohol, their mother, Miss Iris, she was not present. And this is another reason that drew me to, like I said, it was exposing me to a different world.
So now, you're saying that, you know, their home life in some ways mirrored yours, a large family, a mom who, you know, a praying mom and working hard. And yet you're, you know, you're exposed to all of these things. So tell us how that exposure now started to lead you. I know Billy Booth had a friend, and he was a key component to how you actually started to do some of the things that you were doing. So tell us about Terry Williams.
Okay, after 2 weeks of going over Billy Booth's house on a regular basis, Billy Booth introduced me to a guy named Terry Williams at that time. He was 2 years older than I. He was 14, and I was 12 at the time. And Terry, he started telling me about shoplifting, and he asked me on one particular day to go with him to 7-Eleven, and he actually showed me how. I was scared when we first went, and he started putting candy bars and other products from the 7-Eleven store into his socks. And after that, being exposed to that, he told me the next time we came, he said, "You just give it a try. He said, just wear long socks, wear baggy pants, you know." And I followed his instructions, and I did the exact same thing. And as time went on, we continued to shoplift. And the shoplift from shoplifting, we escalated into started stealing bicycles. From bicycle, we started going into Sears and Robots, stealing jumpsuits, you know. And the way we would do that, we would put on large clothes.
I'm curious about something, though. I'm wondering, you know, Billy Booth, this is his friend. Did he join you guys? Did he
Billy Booth, he never went with us, you know, to engage in any of the criminal activities that we, because he was very afraid and scared. And we always, if we were still a bicycle, we would bring Billy a bicycle back. And whenever we would, like, steal clothes, we would also steal clothes for Billy Booth. And like I said, the list, it went on and on. We started doing burglaries in the local area, breaking into bars and the restaurants, bringing food and other products back, like tater chips and cookies and stuff. Any products that the restaurant or stores had, you know, we would bring them back to Billy Booth's house, because his house was, like, right across the street from some of these bars and restaurants and stores.
Right. So I have to ask you, did your mother know where you were, you know, all this? Did she know about Billy Booth? That, you know, was she aware?
No, at the beginning, during the first maybe 3 weeks, she always used to ask me, because I would go home after school. I would go to Billy's house, and maybe around just before it get dark, I would go home. But she was always asking me where was I, and I would lie and say I was at the recreation center somewhere. And one particular night, when I stayed over Billy Booth's house, she actually literally walked almost over Fort Pierce looking for me, you know, and she found me at Billy Booth's house. And
so now I'm curious, you know, when you finally told her what was up, what was her, you know, in terms of where you were hanging out, because as you mentioned, that neighborhood was not the best, and most parents do not want their kids, you know. So what did she say to you? What was her response?
Well, she actually didn't. She asked me where I was at. Like I say, each and every time she asked me when I came home, I lied to her. I would tell her I was at the recreation center, which was they had several recreation centers in Fort Pierce at that time, place where you can go after school, like the Boys and Girls Club and shoot pool and play other games. But she actually walked one particular night looking for me and found me at Billy Booth's house. And that's when she had the opportunity to meet Billy's mother. And Billy's mother, Miss Iris, she explained to my mother that, you know, that I have been coming over there for quite some time, and that she told her that as long as I come there and be up under her roof, I would have to follow her rules and regulations, and that if I get out of line, she would discipline me as well.
So you're saying that your mom was okay with you being in that side of town? She didn't have...
She was not okay with me being there. But I remember that particular, I didn't want to go home, and I had to begin to be disobedient and unmannered, you know, not following the values and more that she instilled in me.
I mean, because you're saying you slept over at his house, but if she was out looking for you, it sounded more like you ran away.
Yes, I did. Like I said, on two or three different occasions, I did run away at the beginning, and she didn't know where I was at. And like I said, and doing it, most of the time it was on the weekends, and I would lie and say I was staying the night weekend with my father, because at that particular time I was spending the weekends with my father. But I was I could not remember everything, but I knew I was lying. Every time I did it, I would lie and say that I was with my father, I used to at my grandmother's house during the nights I stayed at Billy Booth's house.
You know, this is a very important point for those who are listening, whether you're parents or whether your youth. You know, at that age, 12, 13, 14, 15, your mind is so impressionable. And
yes.
So you were just following these urges and instincts that you had that were leading you in a direction. It actually was pulling you away from someone who really cared about you and was giving you good advice. And I know that your mom actually did not want you to go over into that neighborhood, but you wanted to, you know, you wanted to go over there.
Exactly. I was very rebellious about it, and I was very stubborn. And like I said,
and there's something about, you know, forbidden fruit that, you know, that it's somehow we think it tastes sweeter or it's better for us. But when we come back, we're going to find out exactly where that forbidden fruit tends to lead us, okay?
Okay.
Now let my heart flow within this evening, day and night without them ceasing. And it's so good, I want to sink my teeth in. So we all know that looks deceiving. It looks so pleasing. And I want it, but I don't need it. Should I grab it? And now I'm reaching. And now I'm eating. Forbidden fruit.
Yeah, as I'm looking from afar, it looks delicious. But every step I take is looking more suspicious. So I wait with a fork and a knife and a clean napkin on my plate. No waitress to wait, I'm just decided on my fate. Wiping off my face, hunger pangs is another thing. Am I set up for bait? Dang, I noticed that I was struggling with everything. Money and pride or sex before a wedding ring. Prada and Gucci, even a little Vera Wang. I'm making a mess of myself, I'm counting every stain. So I get up, wiping the crumbs off my jeans. I was made clean, why is it dirt in my jeans? Digging deep, I'm feeling like another guy. Innocent, but on the inside, I make you wonder why. I seem stressed as I'm dating the seem stressed. Can deceiving eyes make leaves look like a green dress? Yeah.
Now let my eyes flow within this evening, day and night without them ceasing. It looks so good, I want to sink my teeth in. But we all know that looks deceiving. It looks so pleasing. And I want it, but I don't need it. Should I grab it? And now I'm reaching. And now I'm eating. Forget it
now.
Partaking of forbidden fruit. And I tell you, forbidden fruit always has a price to pay with it, which we will find out in a few moments. We are here at Don't Give Up Radio. I am your host, Jackie Wayans. We're speaking with Mr. Alfred Perry. We started off the show with Alfred just describing, you know, growing up in a large family and just playing like boys do, and found himself making a friend with someone who was a fine friend, lived in a side of town that was known for certain activities, known for certain things, and instead of maybe inviting Billy to his house, he kept going over there and eventually met another friend who was a little older, and that friend introduced you to shoplifting, introduced you to first stealing candies and things of that nature, and then it just kept developing more and more and more. So I'm wondering, at what point did you start to get caught? Can you talk to us about the first time you were picked up?
Yes, it was during one of particular time, Billy, Terry Williams and I went to Sears and Robots. We was shoplifting sweatsuits, and we was caught. And the police was called, and we was taken to one of the local police stations. And at that particular time, my mother,
how you were, you know, describe for us the, you know, the how you were shoplifting. Like, what were you going to get that
day? We would get two or three sweatsuits. The jacket always matches the pants, and we would go inside the dressing room, and we would take the clothes that we had on. We would take them off because they was always a big pair of shirt, a big shirt, a large shirt, and a larger pair of pants. And we would put two or three sweatsuits on, and we would put our regular clothes right back on over those, and we would like walk right out the store. But on this particular day, when we followed the same routine that we normally do, we was one of the employees saw us, and they called the police, and we was arrested and taken to one of the local police stations. And our mother, parents was contacted, and at that time, my mother did, she didn't have a vehicle, so they would take us to the detention center. And after the 21 days, we were released back to our parents.
Right, but I mean, this was your first time. It wasn't 21 days, was it?
The first time, I can't honestly say I can remember, but I remember that during that particular time, I thought it was there 21 days, but my mother didn't come get us, didn't come get me, and Terry's mother didn't come get him as well. And I know that at one particular time, I did do 21 days during the first time I started shoplifting.
Wow. So how did you feel about yourself? I know you mentioned you were scared, but what else was going through your mind?
I was very scared. I was not only scared, but I was ashamed, because my mother, she did come and visit me, and my father also came and visit me when I was in the detention center. And she was very upset about it. She was very emotional about it. And I had promised her, she asked me to promise her that I would be obedient and that I would, you know, continue to go to school and allow God to continue, because we was raised in a very spiritual home, and we went to church on a regular basis. So I promised her that I would get out and continue to go to church, continue to go to school, and do the right thing. But after being released, it wasn't a week later, I was right back at Terry Wisdom house or Billy Booth house.
That quickly, a week?
No more than a week or two, because like I said, I was being arrested almost like on a regular basis. I actually have a copy of my PSI, and if you look at the dates, it was almost a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks apart, I was getting arrested, going back and forth to the detention center.
So after that initial moment of fear and shame, clearly you got over that quickly. What were you feeling now as you started to just repeatedly keep going back there? I mean, what was the juvenile detention center to you in terms of
juvenile detention center? At that particular time, the males and the females both shared the same living space. We would come out in a day room. They played at a large area where they call it a day room, and we would come out and mingle all together. And I can remember, as though it was yesterday, it was kind of exciting to me, you know, not the first time, but after the second and the third and fourth time, I found myself, you know, actually liking it, coming there. And and my father would bring food, and other patients that was there, they were family, would bring food as well, you know, and it became, like I said, it became almost like my second home, because I actually went to the detention center 12 times.
Wow.
And I was back and forth.
Now, I will say that detention centers today are not like that. They are definitely more prison-oriented and stringent and strict on kids. In fact, in New York City, if you are actually convicted or sentenced, you get to go to Rikers with all of the big boys. So it's not
That's
a pretty picture at all. So, you know, for you, this was almost becoming a second home for you, and you weren't really calculating the long-term risk of this, and clearly you were missing a lot of school as well. Had you dropped out of school at this
point? No, I did not drop out of school. And each and every time I was released from the detention center, like I said, each and every time my mother had to come pick me up, I would go to court, and the court would release me, you know, from the court, and I would go home with my mother. And like I said, after 2 or 3 days, I was right back at, like I said, Billy Booth's house, or at Terry's house, and we was back off into engaging in criminal activities. And before you know
now,
it, I was arrested again.
Did your mother become discouraged at some point and just kind of, you know, threw her hands up or said forget it?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
That's exactly what happened. One particular time, I was actually almost going on 13 years old, and my mother, she told the judge, she said, Your Honor, I just can't do anything with him. I just can't do anything. And at that time, they sentenced me to a place called the Youth Hall in Fort Pierce. It was a facility that housed people for 6 months to a year. And I stayed there. I was housed, incarcerated there for a total of 6 months.
Mm. That's a heartbreaking moment for a parent when they have to admit that and pronounce that publicly. It's one thing to know it in your mind or your heart, but when you have to say it out loud to the judicial system, it's not too nice. So here it is. You've actually built quite a long record for yourself, and over time continued in that path. And it came a time when you were actually falsely arrested and falsely charged. You were beaten and you were mistreated. I do want to say this next section we're going to go into, this show in no means is anti-police. We respect and appreciate those who are laying their lives down to uphold the law, and we know that there are many things that are happening. So for those who are abusing their power, and you got to experience that, unfortunately, firsthand, but no one was willing to hear your voice because
That's
of
correct.
The record you had. So tell us about your time in real prison.
Okay. Well, I was sentenced to prison. My very first time I went to prison, I was 16 years old in 1981. I was sentenced to 18 months for burglary. That was my very first time going to prison when I was 16 years old. And it was in 1994, what you're referring to now, it was in 1994. I was shot by Fort Pierce, Florida Bells Bondsman, and I was beaten by two law enforcement. I was doing my arrest in 1994. And after being arrested, they fabricated their police reports and stated that I assaulted them and that I battered them, which was not true. And I was visually sentenced to a total of 40 years for those crimes.
And how old were you at that time?
In 1994, I was 28 years old.
You were 28 and you were sentenced to 40 years?
I was sentenced to a total of 40 years in 1994, 95. Right. I was arrested in 94, but I was sentenced in 1995.
Okay. And so you went to prison, and what did you experience there?
Okay, after going to prison, well, before I went to prison, I was determined, after being sentenced to 40 years, I was very upset, and I was determined to go to prison and educate myself in the law, and that's exactly what I did. After arriving to prison, I got involved in the law library, and I eventually became a certified law clerk, and I continued to educate myself in the law. And I came back on, I was returned to outside court on appeal in 1996 and 1997, and I eventually gave some of the time back. And on 2008, I was released after serving 14 years and 9 months.
But I actually want to spend more time, you know, because you set up a picture in terms of juvenile justice almost like being a second home for you. So I really
yes.
want to get a sense of what prison was like for you.
Well, prison,
because I,
for the what, very first time.
Let me just explain why I'm doing that. And that's because
okay.
young people today seem to glamorize jail life, right?
Yes.
And there's a difference between juvenile detention and jail. And so you experienced that difference. I want them to hear that from you.
Yes, well, I can honestly say, admit that when I first was sent to prison, I was very nervous. I was very frightened in a way, but I had made my mind up that I was not going to let anyone take advantage of me, and I wanted to do everything I could possibly do to make people, officers and inmates know that I was not afraid. And that's the attitude I took to prison with me, and I eventually ended up getting locked up in confinement because of it. And but the prison life was totally different from the detention center life. You was treated different, you know, by the prison guards, and you was amongst adult males, some males that was in there for murder or, you know, other offense, violent charges as well. So it was not an easy experience. It was a very dangerous experience, as you could call it, because I could say I was 16 at that time. And after serving, I served 18 months in prison during my 16 to 17 year.
Well, you said that you were mistreated. What do you mean?
Say that again.
You said you were mistreated while you were in prison. What do you mean by mistreated?
Okay, if you're referring to the first time I went to prison in 94, are you talking about 94?
Well, yeah, you brought up the second one, so let's stay there.
Okay, then when I was in 1994, after being sentenced to 40 years in prison, like I said, I educated myself in the law and eventually became a certified law clerk. But during my 40-year prison sentence, I was known, built up a reputation as a jailhouse lawyer, which is also known as a litigator. And I was hated, you know, by the prison guards, and because I started filing complaints about officers abusing, you know, inmates in the confinement units, I was targeted and I was retaliated against, and I was almost nearly beaten to death in 1995 by three prison guards. They beat me nearly to death while I was handcuffed behind my back, and I was rushed to a hospital in Orlando, Florida. Well, I was bleeding on the inside because they had kicked me so many times, but God brought me through that, and I was transferred to another facility. But during the 14 years that I was incarcerated, I was beaten to death nearly three times, and my food was poisoned as well on several occasions.
My goodness. And you were also in isolation for long periods of time, right?
Yes. During the 14-year prison sentence, I was on two different occasions. My first sentence to confinement, which they call it close management confinement, where you're locked up in a cell 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My first sentence as a result of fabricated disciplinary reports that was written on me by certain officials because of me filing complaints. My first time, I served 18 months in a confinement unit, and maybe 3 years after that, I was sentenced to 3 years in a solitary confinement, where I served 22 months in one cell. But during my time,
7 days a week, right? For like
24 hours a day. You're locked up. You only come out 1 hour a day for shower, and you have recreation three times a week. But during my time in the confinement units, I had 7-8 law books. I had my own law books. I had several. I had the Black Law Dictionary. I had several other dictionaries. I was always elevating my mind because from my own experience of seeing other incarcerated inmates.
I want to ask you about that for a second. Sorry for cutting you, but I wanted to go back because you did say that before you went in, you had made up your mind that you would be a certain way. When you're in that kind of, and you're describing what you're describing in terms of being mistreated and abused, and there's no one who's willing to hear your voice, at a certain point, most people have a breaking point and they just give in to anger or bitterness. That never happened to you?
No, that never happened to me. I was determined. Even though I was incarcerated, I had set short-term and long-term goals, and even though also I had a 40-year prison sentence.
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. I just really want to hone this in because it's so important. People are listening. You're saying you never had any anger, any bitterness towards the people who were abusing you or mistreating you at all, ever.
Oh yeah, I was very bitter. I was very bitter about the fact that I was sentenced to prison. for crimes that I didn't commit. I was very bitter and angry about the fact that, you know, I was abused during my arrest and during my time of incarceration in prison. I was, like I said, I was abused by a prison guard. I was very bitter. I became very angry, and I was pretty much antisocial during my prison sentence, you know, during the entire time that I was incarcerated, up to my 12th year of incarceration. You know, I had a lot of hate, a lot of bitterness in me because of, you know, what had happened to me and what I had witnessed see happen to other inmates as well.
Okay, so now did there come a point when you felt that you needed to change that? Because
yes.
Clearly the person I'm talking today is not that. So what realization did you come to?
Well, it was in 2007. I was incarcerated in Miami, Florida, Everglades Correctional Institution. It was at that time that I decided that I couldn't return to society with the kind of hate and bitterness that I had in me and be a law-abiding citizen and accomplish the goals and visions that I had wanted to accomplish at that time. So I made my mind up, and I decided that I was going to allow God, you know, to transform my life, because many times in the past I tried to do it so many times. Because at that time I hadn't been to prison four times already before this prison sentence in 94. So I had made my mind up that I was just going to allow God, you know, to step into my life and transform my life. And that's so I started doing things that I wasn't doing before.
I'm gonna break here. We're going to listen to another song and come back and hear more about that process, because that's where everything usually changes and begins.
Yes.
Life is not perfect, but you have a power that's available to you to work through it. You're listening to now. You may be thinking to yourself, you know, I'm in a situation. It may not be this situation, but you're saying, I need some help. Well, you just can cry out to the Lord, and He will be there to provide that help.
I confess, SOS, I need you daily.
Yeah.
Can't lie, say the pain don't faze me. My God, who gon' help these babies?
My.
I've been in the fire so long, I can't get burned no more. I thought you was putting out the flame, but it was rain from the storm. Thoughts over my head, making me stress all day long. They won't let me rest, hands on my chest. I ain't that strong. I need a lifeline right now. 911 won't do. My back against the wall now. Done all that I could do. I prayed every prayer, went to every service like I know how. Just a ship without a sail. I'm lost without your help. I need help. Oh, Lord. I need your help. Help. Ooh, Lord. But it ain't about my will, it's all about what you want. Yeah. Family used to be first, things getting worse in my home. My brother is hurt, we need a word, it's too far gone. I need a lifeline right now, 911 won't do. My back against the wall now, done all that I could do. I prayed every prayer, went to every service like I know how. Just a ship without a sail, I'm lost without you.
little help now, see. I feel left out, I can't tell my right from my left now. But my mama's crying cause my daddy's dying. He got pains all in his chest now. My daughter's having these nightmares. I might be wrong, but I'm right here, yeah. I'm trying to hold on when my hands hurt or the ropes out. Cause when life fights, it don't fight fair. So I'm leaning all on these ropes now. And I got hope, but it's low now. So I'm leaning all on these quotes now. Like never leave me, won't forsake me. If you don't help me, I don't make it.
Right now, you may be listening to this. You could be in a hospital room. You can have a kid who went out and you don't know where they went. You could be facing so many various challenges that say, you know what, life is just too hard and I want to give up. I want to throw in the towel. I can tell you that I have been there for my own reasons. Thankfully, God loved me enough to say, you know, Jackie, if you just hold on, I promise you, you will see what I've spoken to you come to pass. And let me be clearer. If you're listening today and you are not currently in a relationship where you have a personal prayer conversation, belong to family of the living God, I can tell you that Romans 10, 9 and 10 says that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that he is raised from the dead and he lives forevermore, that you will be saved. And at that moment, you're given the Spirit of God, the mind of God, the ability, the power of God to be able to understand his will and to start to read his word and get the guidance that you need for life. It's not a magic pill. We have to be diligent. We have to pray. We have to listen. And as we find out from Alfred, who was in a situation where he had been so mistreated, even though you might be listening and saying, but look at all those years that he did X, Y, and Z, it still came down to a point where, you know, he was being physically and mentally tormented. And Alfred, you talked about mindset right before we left, and you talked about getting yourself connected back with God. So talk to me about how you started to do that while in jail. What was the process?
Okay, it was a combination of reasons. One that had a real great impact on me was my brother's death. My brother Andrew, he was 2 years older than I, and he died during my incarceration. He died from AIDS. And my sister told me that he asked to see me, and I cannot tell you that words can express how much of an impact his death had on me. And I had made a promise to him that if I ever were to get out of prison alive, that I was going to do the right thing, and I was going to, you know, strive to and allow God, you know, to use me to do His will. And that had a great impact on me. But the process started when I decided to change my mindset. I knew that in order for my life to change, I first had to allow God to come into my life and help me transform my mindset. So I started doing things that I wasn't normally doing in prison. I started going to the chapel, which is the local church in prison. I started listening to gospel music. I started going to the general library, you know, reading all types of world history books, black history books. And my mindset began to change. And as I began to change my mindset, my outlook on life changed, my attitude changed, started to change. And I continued to this routine on a regular basis, and I set my short-term and my long-term goals. And 2 years later, you know, God opened the gates for me.
Amen to that. I mean, it's something, you were in something so big, there was no way that you could do that alone and do that in your own power. And actually, as you were talking about mindset, you reminded me of Mandela, because, you know, many people go to his prison cell now and they wonder, how did he survive that? But we know by his own words, it was his mindset. He put his mind in a different place. And I was reminded recently of the movie Shawshank Redemption, where one of the prisoners there, it was his mindset that kept him. And there was another prisoner whose mindset was something else, so that even when he escaped, his mindset was not to survive and to succeed. So the fact that you said you planned long-term and short-term goals, I think it's phenomenal. What were some of those goals? I'm curious.
But my short-term goals that I said upon my release was to, you know, to get my ID and to get my driver's license, then to get a job. Once I got a job, I wanted to get 2 jobs, and I didn't stop there. I said, I want to get my third job, which I eventually accomplished those goals. And my long-term goals was to start writing, publish my books and my autobiography, which I've accomplished that as well. I've written and published 3 other books as well. And I began to mentor to the youth. I traveled in 2011. I traveled to Sweden, and I spoke at a university. I spoke to students in high school students there in Sweden. And those were some of my short-term, long-term goals that I accomplished.
I think it's great that you did that while you were in prison. That's excellent, because that helps the mind to have something to lock onto and
yes.
to propel towards. Now, we all know, though, when people get out of jail, it's very hard for you to deal with the limitations that society puts on you, you know, where you live, what jobs are available to you. How did you handle that type of stuff?
Well, you know, I knew before my release, I knew after serving 14 years and 9 months, I knew it was not going to be easy for me to get a job. But I had, like I say, I had convinced myself that as long as I keep God in front of me, as long as I acknowledge God, as long as I continue to move forward, I would make positive progress. You know, and I knew I was determined to succeed. And as I had the opportunity to read many, like I say, Black history books and about the how our ancestors were able to overcome so many obstacles and difficulties and trials and tribulations. So I pretty much lined myself in a line with what they accomplished. And I knew if they did it, I can do it too. You know, and
that's
the opportunity. Yes,
that's another great point. If you're listening today and you're in a situation, it doesn't have to be Alfred, but I can tell you, you have to expose yourself to literature. You have to expose yourself to people and stories of people who have overcome, who have gone through great difficulties and made it, because it's going to inspire you. It's going to help you to think, I can get through this. You know, maybe if I can just hold on for 24 more hours. Sometimes it's so bad you just want to hang on to the end of the day, but you've got to fuel yourself with these type of things. So I'm really glad that you said that. I'm curious also, did you ever have a time when you just reflected back, not on other people's biographies and lives, but what about your own? Did you ever look back and say, where did I go off track? Where did I, you know, go wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. As I had many opportunities to do it. Like I said, during the 14 years, 14 years is a very long time. So I had a lot of time to think. I had a lot of time to reflect. And as I began to reflect back, you know, I actually had the opportunity to go back to the roots and the values and discipline that my mother instilled in us at a very young age. I had the opportunity to reflect on how she tried so much to keep me out of trouble, and my father, the positive advice that he shared with me, and the positive advice that jail guards and sheriff deputies that knew me from being in and out of the system, they always used to say, Perry, you know, stay out of trouble, man. You got a bright head on your shoulders. Make something out your life. You know, I had the opportunity to reflect on my brother's death, you know, and how much he wanted me to stay out of trouble. And the list just goes on. And that, too, you know, had an impact on me wanting to remain determined and focused to accomplish my goals in life.
When you reflected back to your 12-year-old self, your 13-year-old self, your 16-year-old self, what did you see as the reason for you making the choices that you did?
Yeah, most definitely peer pressure. As I looked back at my childhood, even up to my adult years, I can remember as though it was yesterday. I actually allowed others, not saying that I did it on my own, but I allowed other people, my so-called friends, to influence me to do a lot of the things I did. For example, there was times I didn't want to get out of bed and go commit a crime, but to improve something to my so-called friend or to impress them, I did it anyway. Because on two occasions, I actually went to prison twice for crimes that I didn't commit, crimes that my so-called friends committed, and I took the rap for them. Even though I know I had nothing to do with the crime, but to keep from being called a coward, to keep from being saying that I was not, hip or whatever, I took the crimes, took the charges.
And I don't want anyone to listen to this and say, well, he's okay now, so if I went through that course, I'll be okay. Everyone has a different course. And clearly, if you take the advice that I just gave in terms of really entering a lifelong relationship with the Lord, he's going to give you wiser ways to make choices in life. He's going to give you that red flag to say, don't go that way, come over on this side. And you said a lot during the show tonight about, Billy Booth's mom and your mom instilling values. And I wanted to kind of just nitpick on words a little bit. I believe that they taught you guys values. But in order for it to be instilled, that's the time when you decide, I'm going to take ownership of these values I'm being taught. So when those values became yours, that's when they were instilled in you, right? But until that time, they were just taught, and you had the ability to take it or leave it, let it go in one ear and out the other. But the moment that you embraced them and made them real is when you started to get the power and the strength to make the changes that you needed to make, and now you can fly, you can soar. You mentioned your books, you mentioned going around the country and even internationally. What are some of the things that you say to young people as you speak with them and share with them?
Well, the message that I've been sharing since my release, is especially to the younger generation, is to first to keep yourself spiritually in tune with God, number one, and to always set short-term and long-term positive goals, and to be extremely careful about the type of company that you keep. In other words, I tell them I often use the word association. Association brings on assimilation, meaning that if you associate with bad company, you become as your company. Because I, too, at a young age, I allowed people to influence me to do wrong. So as I reflected back on my life, I can recall the many times that I, did wrong because of the company and the type of people that I associated with. So I tell young people to be extremely careful about the company that you keep, and to always strive with determination and dedication and commitment to do the right and positive things in life.
And that's why I named this broadcast. You know, in the beginning, clearly, as we heard your story from just throwing rocks at Billy Booth and how things progressed, that clearly this was an issue of influence. Clearly, when you saw the whole world that you had never seen before, so it scared you, it pulled you in at the same time. It kept sucking you in and sucking you in until you were in a whole nother lifestyle and a whole nother person, to the point where your mom just threw up her hands and said, I don't even know what to do. And so that's the power of wrong influence. But once you captured that and you realize that you're now using your influence in a positive way to reach people and telling your story, and in that, you are receiving a type of justice for yourself, where the great justice is knowing that you are able to get yourself right before God, and then after that, before man. I thank you so much for sharing what you have. There's so much we haven't said. I know your website is www.alfreds.com. journey.com, right? And there's no apostrophe. It's just Alfred with an S, journey.com. If you want to know more, you can find him there. You've been listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Waynes. If you like what you heard, simply like me on Facebook. The page is Don't Give Up Radio. Make sure that radio is on there, and you'll find me there. And if you're on Blog Talk Radio, just click the follow button under Jackie Waynes. And we look forward to bringing you some great shows through the rest of this spring and summer. But I want to say to you, as I always do, be your own best hero this week, because the greatest hero of all said that you are worth it when he gave his life for you. He said, your life is so precious to me that I'll lay my life down so that you can live life more abundantly. Thank you again, Alfred, and I hope you just continue
to
fly
high. Thank you as well, Jack.
All right. Have a great night.
You have a blessed night as well.
Yolanda, won't you sing the song?
See, I was all.